Hello, welcome to People of Color with Henry Banks on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'm here with Jean Nichols and Deborah Smith. Jean Nichols is of the African American Leadership Forum Health Subcommittee, and that organization is located in St. Paul, Minnesota. Jean is in our region to present an educational seminar on the topic of an African American study that was conducted in the Twin Cities and funded by the Minnesota Department of Health. That study looked at attitudes, use patterns, and menthol cigarettes among African Americans, and there were additional findings a part of that study. Jean was the keynote speaker at the American Lung Association luncheon held on Wednesday, March 15th in Pier B Hotel in downtown Duluth. His speech was titled, Big Tobacco Targets African Americans. And we are very happy that you're here on the show today. Also, Deborah Smith is a tobacco control manager at the American Lung Association. She's based in Duluth, Minnesota. She is coordinating a project that will limit how tobacco products, namely menthol and flavored tobacco products, are sold in the city of Duluth. I want to ask you, welcome also to you, Deb, but I want to ask you right now if there's anything you want to share with our listeners that I didn't share with them that you want to tell them about yourself, Jean, beyond what I could introduce.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm glad to be here. A little bit more about the African American Leadership Forum. We're an organization in the Twin Cities that not only works on health issues, but we also work on economic development and education issues as it pertains to the African American community. I happen to be the co-chair of the Health and Wellness Group. And so a part of our mantle has been preventative health, which this menthol issue falls clearly under. So it was quite an honor and I would say almost a windfall that this issue became known to me. I brought it to our executive director, Jeffrey Hassan, who said, let's run with it. Let's go, because it is very important. People are dying every day in our community. So it seemed like a natural fit for us to be doing this. And so and what we'll talk about today is the work that we've been doing. So I'm really glad to be here to bring it to you.
All right. Thank you. And Deborah, I know you're very busy in the community, but I'm sure there's something else you want to share with our listeners, too.
Absolutely, Henry. Thanks so much for having us on. At the American Lung Association, I'm currently involved with doing some youth outreach in the high school, in the middle schools. Also, I've been working very diligently with the Take Action Minnesota organization on the issue of earned sick and safe time, in which we've been leading that issue in the city to able to offer that as an ordinance in our city and working on that healthcare concern.
All right. So why don't we get into the conversation? Jean, this question is for you. What makes the topic of menthol cigarettes so important for limiting and controlling it? Meaning, why basically have African American people been controlled by the menthol cigarettes that they were targeted by?
Absolutely. Great question, which got us into this work. What many people don't realize, and we're learning through the education process that we're doing right now in the community, is that going back into the 30s and 40s, Big Tobacco actually targeted the African-American community with free cigarettes. What they did was they sponsored concerts. Many of your listeners may remember the Cool Jazz Fest, things like that. And it started in the 50s. And the number of people who were smoking menthol back in 1952, number of African-Americans was 5%. In 2014, the number is staggering. It's 86% of the African-American community smoke menthol cigarettes. So they were quite effective in targeting our community, and that's what got us involved in this.
So it's a compelling topic right now because it's really impacting our community in ways that are really out of control.
Well, yeah, and let me explain some of those ways. It's a health issue. So I always tell my personal story. I have a brother who is only 4 years older than I am, and he has COPD, and he's on an oxygen tank. That is, you know, at his age, I can remember he was my hero when we were growing up, and he was always fixing cars, and the smoke was always permeating up from underneath the car where he was under fixing. But still, he was my hero, and he can't walk 2 feet now without oxygen. But our community is not only suffering from lung disease, COPD, but cancer, lung cancer. The African American community is really affected in greatly. The highest number of deaths in the Minnesota in the African American community is around those issues, lung cancer and things like that.
You know, when I was doing some research on this topic, the first thing that I noticed was, or it felt as though this was an intentional thing that was done against our community. But our community's not benefiting from any of those dollars necessarily that are coming back into the states to help people who are going through these health conditions in the state of Minnesota and across the country. I'm not seeing any of those dollars really reaching our communities.
Well, I think this is the first time we've been able to try to get some of the dollars. So the work I'm doing is really tied to the state health improvement plan. There were dollars allotted through the SHIP program that said, go out into the community and educate the community around four issues. What is menthol? What are the harms of menthol? What were the predatory practices of menthol? And what can you do as a community member to get involved in this work? So the first thing we did was and numbers we'll talk about in a few minutes, we surveyed the community. And we gave members of the community who came up and took the survey a gift card so that they can be involved and actually get some of the dollars back to themselves. And we were able to do quite a number. Well over 400 surveys were done in the community. The next part is the education program that we're doing now. And we, from those surveys, we found that there were people who wanted to be involved. They wanted to be what we call change agents, to go out into the community and do the education. And we're also giving money to them to do that work. So when they come and the change agents put on these programs, they're able to provide food, soft drinks, and have people come in and listen to a presentation. So we are beginning to get the money back to the community now.
Mm-hmm. So you've had some good successes.
Oh, absolutely.
With regard to tobacco policy. Within the state of Minnesota, what are some of those policies and how are they making changes within the community? You want to talk about that, Deborah?
Sure, absolutely. One of the things that we take for granted is smoke-free air. When we go to a campus, like what here at the campus in Wisconsin, it's smoke-free air. We also, look at other policies that were taken in place, particularly in our city of Duluth, was smoke-free bars, mm-hmm. and the ability to have a meal without someone smoking next to you. So also smoke-free restaurants. So some of those things that we just really naturally take for granted. And I remember back, many years ago when folks used to smoke on planes, and it would be just, there would be the intrusion right next to you, smoking a cigarette in a very small locale. So that some of the things that we've taken for granted our children now experience smoke-free air, and that in those policies took a number of years to take place, and there was pushback, and there will be pushback from Big Tobacco on these kinds of policies. But most municipalities and many cities realize that these are things that we want to have for our health. We want to have clean air.
Can you, either one of you, I'm really interested in this menthol issue, the concern, it's really big, how that menthol, I find to be a problem, is reaching down to our kids, and how it's affecting and impacting and bringing our kids into this system of once we got them, we've got them, it's going to be hard to get them off, from smoking cigarettes and other things. Can you really kind of focus more on the impact of the menthol this is an epidemic in the African American community and other communities of color. Can you talk more about how that's impacting our kids?
We most certainly can. With youth that are inexperienced with smoking, their introductory product will be something that is a menthol product or something that's candy or fruit flavored, in terms of the e-cigarettes or the electronic cigarettes. And the youth are attracted to this, and Big Tobacco knows that. So they target their packaging. They target it with the flavors specifically designed so that it's so kids really will like it and like the way that looks and enjoy specific marketing the packages that appeal to kids and young people. And so this is still a problem in our state of Minnesota as well as throughout the country. It is a significant health issue with the tobacco companies targeting youth. And given that these products, the menthol products in particular, are very easy to start using, they're also very difficult to quit, and studies bear that out.
So that's exactly right. Yeah, if I can add to that, we found that in our baseline information from the community. So let's start at the beginning. What is menthol? Menthol is what people don't know. It's an additive to the nicotine. And what it does is that if anybody is familiar with Vicks vapor rub, when your parents put Vicks on you, it feels like your chest is opening up. Well, that's exactly what happens. It allows the smoke to go deeper into your lungs. And so what happens is that African Americans were targeted with this. They felt it was cool. That cool, that's what the ad said, is cool, is refreshing. And they really bought it, you know, shame on us perhaps, but we did. And it was a refreshing thing to do. And it, nationally, 88% of African Americans smoke mentholated products. What we found in our survey here in Minnesota in the Twin Cities was 84%. So we were within the statistical realm, if you will, of seeing this permeating of menthol. The second thing is, We learned that people were not aware of it. They were not aware of what menthol was. So that's why we're doing the education now. You know, with anything, the more that we are educated about, the more you know about it, the more you might be willing to make a change. And so our change agents are going and doing that. And what we're finding out is, as we just heard, was the fact that young people are the first ones to really gravitate toward that. That's their starter product. And so we needed to do something about that. So some of the other policies that we've worked on are in Minneapolis and St. Paul is that we have restricted the sale of these candy-flavored products to the tobacco shops. In order to buy products from the tobacco shops, you have to be 21 years of age. But we had to stop there. We couldn't get the menthol into that. That was a conversation that the legislators wanted us to come back to. But we it's a start. We had to get those starter products out of the reach of children.
So, Deb, what's going on in the city of Duluth with regard to the menthol question and concern? And if I could ask you also to talk about what schools are doing, K through 12, really, what they're doing to combat some of this.
Well, Gene hit it right on the head is the educational component. We actually are going to the schools and providing the school programs that are already existing and presenting the information, letting the students know that they have been targets. And once they realize that they've been targeted with this information, they become angry. And they become more aware of how advertising is being pushed on them. And so the education that we're doing is with the Denfeld High School. We've been there a few times, and we've had different events there. We've also been working with the East High School with the social justice group. And we've had other organizations like the Guys with Ties at the Lincoln Park Middle School, in which then they have been a part of some of our digital storytelling that we've done with the youth and have told their stories in very intimate stories of how tobacco has affected their lives. And we have an exhibit coming up on March 31st of their stories that will be, those stories will be displayed, their photography, along with their telling of their portrayals on at the Gamaji in Trepanier Hall, which is on 204 East 2nd Street in Duluth. So we want to invite the public to that so that you can actually see the kind of work that we have been doing with youth.
Absolutely. This is Henry Banks. I'm here with Gene Nichols and Deborah Smith. They are here from the American Lung Association and from the African American Leadership Forum. I am so grateful for your time today. I know you're very busy and you're kind of outreach. You know, outreach is important, but, you know, it takes a lot of time to get the message out there. You're getting the message out about a very important topic. I know that young people have always been on my radar as wanting to find creative young people, wanting to make change in their communities. How additionally will young people be involved in this program?
Well, recently we actually just came back from a day at the Capitol in which many of our students were there and met with their legislators and had an opportunity to meet one-on-one with the individuals who create policy. So it was a chance for these students to get up close and personal with those individuals and tell them what they think about the current state of tobacco policies in our state of Minnesota. And so those are some of the opportunities that we've presented for our young people.
Mm-hmm. Gene, I wonder if you could talk about secondhand smoke.
Sure. You know, and many people don't understand just how dangerous secondhand smoke is. And actually, there are as many chemicals that are released into the air, especially in a car. You'll notice if you look over as you're driving, a parent will be smoking maybe with the window down. And that smoke is really getting into the car and into the lungs. And a child actually breathes almost twice as deeply and as fast as we do as adults. So they're taking it in more steadily and more deeply into their lungs. So it is a huge problem. However, it's a sticky area for us to be looking at because there are a lot of people who feel, you know, don't talk about my car. You know, that's my personal domain. But it's having an effect on our young people. And by effect, I mean we're seeing higher rates of asthma, you know, in young children. And if you know, take a look at some of the – dig deeper, you'll find that many of the parents are smokers. As I talk about the car, you know, so you think you open up the car and you air it out. It takes a while for those chemicals to, you know, dissipate. Mm-hmm. So they stay in the air. You know, they build up rather quickly on one cigarette, but it takes a while for it to dissipate, and that's the problem with
smoking. Clothing as well.
Clothing as well. I mean, it continues to emit. I mean, you're around, if you've ever been around a person that's been smoking, you smell that. It's coming off of that clothing into the air in which you are, you know, breathing as well.
Absolutely. So moving in on communities of color, the tobacco industry has done this for so many years now. To promote their products, why do you think they targeted African American people?
Well, we have, you know, I wish you could have attended some of our training. And as a result of the tobacco settlement, what we saw from their records in 1989 was the Ashley R.J. Reynolds executive say, "We don't smoke this SHIT. We reserve the right to sell it to the black, the poor, the young." That's what got me into this work. When I saw that, I was appalled. Because up until that point, when I would look at Ebony Magazine and Jet Magazine, I thought it was a cool thing, cool with a C, to be smoking and have the big afro and to be laughing and having fun. It was targeted. We were targeted like that.
Yeah. I was looking at that and what you just said about the R.J. Reynolds not smoking the stuff. And I read that just today.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was appalled by as well.
Absolutely.
And how that was an intentional, direct assault on the African-American community.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, they knew they had a target. They had vans. They would park the vans in the corner of, I'm from New York. I can remember the van in Harlem, New York City. Some of my friends here in Minnesota said they remember it in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and give out free cigarettes. Deb mentioned flying. Used to be a time where you can get on the plane and the stewardess would give you free cigarettes and you smoke. So, you know, it's not on, I mean, certainly they did focus on our community, but mm-hmm. it's a marketing ploy. They needed to grow market share. And they did a good job.
Are they focusing on Latino communities and Native communities and
LGBTQ community?
All of
you
those
name
communities.
It. Yes, absolutely. And a lot of the ads that we see even currently in magazines, the ads are focused that you'll see a woman that may look more like a Latina woman. Or you see an ad that you go into a bar that frequents people who are in the LGBTQ community, and they'll have lots of ads on, especially during the Pride Week. So they do mm-hmm. continue to focus. And what other people don't understand is that, you know, the internet and their phones, the kids have their phones, the couponing, and if you just click on one ad on your phone, you will continue to get messages from the tobacco company around coupons that you can redeem to lower the price of cigarettes.
So, I'm thinking I already have the answer to this question, but if this is such a horrible problem in our country, why hasn't our government intervened more so in addressing this in a way, as we all know, is a health issue, especially in the Black community? Why has our government not done much on this, your opinion?
I'll address the Black community. Many of our organizations, and I won't name any organizations at this time, but certainly there are a list of them, financial support is very important. And these big tobacco companies can come in and offer support to these companies. And so that in and of itself is a problem. Money talks. And so if you can get a grant from a tobacco company, you'll take that money. And so it's very, very difficult. Also, the Congressional Black Caucus, and I'll mention that, I mean, it's very clear that they have, you know, the lobby is very strong in Washington, D.C. So in order to make sure that the law is on pass, they lobby very strong our elected officials to make sure it doesn't happen. It doesn't matter who you are. Money really talks. Mm-hmm. It's a money thing, and Big Tobacco has the money to do it.
Yeah, big lobby.
Right. In Minneapolis and St. Paul, they did enact groundbreaking ordinances to restrict the sale of flavored tobacco products. But keep in mind that that did have an exception for flavor menthol products, and they moved these products to adult-only stores, something that we're modeling similarly for Duluth. That is, that we're going to look at these menthol-flavored products, any candy-flavored products, move them to adult-only stores or stores where only adults would be able to patronize, so that the local control is what is of essence here. That is, the cities can enact ordinances for the control of these products. And that's what our plan is. And that's what we will be doing within the coming months. And I know that Gene could probably tell a little bit further about his personal experience with Shoreview and in the city of St. Paul, and how that came about for those ordinances to be implemented.
Sure. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, sure. So Shoreview is a little bit north of St. Paul. And, of course, Minneapolis and St. Paul were the first two cities to move the restricting of candy-flavored products. But we had young people in the Moundsview School District who wanted to get involved in this work. And they did a marvelous job, Deb, as you know. And they went to the city, to the mayor of Shoreview and to the city council. And we testified, and we were quite successful also in Shoreview to restrict the sale of candy and flavored products. But I want to go back to a little bit to your federal question. As Deb says, it has to be at the local level because the federal government stops short. Mm-hmm. They stop short. President Obama even signed a tobacco act that says, okay, we'll be mindful of the fact that there's certain things that we don't want to sell, but they stop short of menthol products. That was, for whatever reason, was in the minds of those who signed that act. But it just comes to show that we, the people, have to begin at the grassroots level to make those changes in our communities.
I'm struck by that. I mean, I'm stuck on this menthol thing because I think that is the demise of our people.
Mm-hmm.
And what can just regular everyday people, what can we do to get this message out?
We definitely want more civic engagement from members of the community, from all parts of the community, to say that these products are things that we do not want to have readily available for our young people. We also need to have more citizen involvement related to tobacco control overall. That is, there are other issues in tobacco control that we could address. But most certainly, it's the menthol and flavored tobacco products right now that we're putting a laser focus on so that we can stamp that out and make those products less available. For those folks who would like to quit smoking, if that was available for them to not have menthol available, about half would not have the ability to have access to that product and would likely remain non-smokers and then would then subsequently have longer, better lives. So it's about, changing people's lives and about the community coming out for the health of everyone.
Mm-hmm. And Deb makes a great point. We found in a survey in the Twin Cities, 60% of the people we surveyed said if menthol products were not available, they would quit smoking. That was astounding, just in our survey and a small amount of people. So, again, it's a matter of what, if you're asking me what's the next step, I think people should try to find out what it is. You know, go to an education. What is menthol? And find out what it's doing. It's not the nicotine that is the problem. Of course, that's the problem. That's the poison.
Right.
But why is the menthol added to the nicotine so much of a problem for us as a community, whether it's the African-American community, the Latino community, and the Asian community also suffer very greatly from the predatory practices. They smoke just as many menthol products as, well, maybe not as much as the African-American community, but they smoke at high rates as well.
So we could kind of say it's almost like sugar in soda. Once you start drinking soda, that sugar content makes that an addictive product.
You know, I laugh at that, and respectfully, I remember from my biology class 101 when we were testing viruses in the test tube. Do you recall what it was that made the virus grow? It was sugar. The more sugar you put into that test tube, the more that virus grew. And I've never forgot that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very similar.
So the menthol is like sugar.
It's like sugar.
In the tobacco industry.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's the addictive part. So someone listening may say, well, I'm on the e-cigarette because I'm trying to quit. What is the health impact of e-cigarettes with regard to this whole conversation?
The flavors. There's so many flavors. You have thousands of flavors. Just name a flavor and they have it in the
bubble gum.
The bubble gum, right. And, cocoa, candy cane,
So you said thousands of flavors.
But what you need to understand is that it is not a safer alternative to stopping, because more than likely the individual goes back to smoking because there is an addictive substance within the e-juice, and that is nicotine. So when you break it all down, the individual who wants to quit smoking should stop smoking, reach out and get cessation support, which is available, you know, within, you know, in many communities, and not use the electronic cigarettes as a coping mechanism for their smoking cessation.
Mm-hmm. Part of the problem with the e-cigarettes today is that the tobacco companies push back because they say there isn't enough science on the e-cigarettes. Yet we know as we sit here this very day, as Deb just said, there's nicotine and there's menthol in that juice that they're doing. It's just a different delivery method. So what the tobacco company has ingeniously done is said, well, wait a minute, this is an electronic. There's a battery in here. You can't use this. Put this in the same category as a combustible, which is what a cigarette is. So they're able to skip by all of the regulations, at least for today. I think the laws are catching up slowly. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that we must understand is that in that vapor, people think that's just water vapor that's going in the air. We do know, scientifically know, that there are chemicals, harmful chemicals. Again, we talked about it in our clothing. There are chemicals in that vapor.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the vapor. So with the vapor, is that the same kind of result as secondhand smoke?
It's very similar. Okay. Again, the delivery is different. There is a mechanism in which that electronic cigarette works, and so that vapor is an offshoot of that. Mm-hmm. So it's not the exact same thing, but you could, yes, it's the, you know, it's a parallel process.
Yeah, it's still an issue.
It's still an issue.
So I'm here with Gene Nichols and Deborah Smith. We're talking about, you know, this very important topic of how tobacco products affect the African-American community, other communities as well. But in my opinion, I believe this has impacted the African-American community more so because of the destructive path that it has taken in our community, because statistically, and I saw this on the internet, that African Americans suffer the greatest burden of the tobacco-related mortality of any ethnic group in America. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. In the incidence of lung cancer and COPD and asthma, the African Americans suffer and die from those type of related deaths in the state of Minnesota higher than any other group. So it's clearly indicated. We work with another organization, North Point Health and Wellness in Minneapolis. And there are the executive director, Stella Whitney West, made a presentation to the African American Leadership Forum. And this was the other way that we got involved in this. And she highlighted what were the four top causes of death in our community. And those are the issues that really rose to the top.
So I'm wondering, Deb, if you are doing any direct work with the local NAACP or the Cross Cultural Alliance, the African American Men's Group, organizations like that in addressing some of these topics related to tobacco.
Yes, we have recently joined partnership with the NAACP and want to gain more access to these organizations to deliver that message. So that is at the start, and we plan on having formal presentations and formal relationships with those organizations that you stated.
So is it important for young people, but is it important for our grandmothers and grandfathers to start looking at this as it relates to their grandkids? You know, I've seen young African-American kids in downtown Duluth with cigarettes in their smoking, and, you know, it's a cool thing for them, so they think. but it's impacting their lives. I don't know necessarily if they're old enough to be smoking, but I do see that. And I'm wondering what the parental or grandparent role is in addressing some of these issues. I know that might be personal, but I think grandparents and parents should take a look at this too.
Well, absolutely. I think it's a couple of things. We know from our survey, we went out to 10 leaders in the community before we went out into the community, and those 10 respected leaders said, we are most afraid of the peer influence, kids talking to kids. An 18-year-old buying the flavored products for the 14-year-old. They were really afraid and how to get, you know, underneath that and do something about that. There's a pastor who is one of my key informants, and she said, when I went to college, my roommate smoked, and I thought she was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen in my life the way she smoked that cigarette, even among adults. But to answer your question more directly, I think it's up to us as adults, as parents, to watch and take a look at what our children are doing. For instance, with the flavored tobacco products, the candy, and many parents didn't know. They thought it was candy. Mm-hmm. They didn't know it was a tobacco product. Take a look at those things that your child has. And I think that's the first thing. Be aware. Take a look at your child's PDA or phone and see the ads that are coming across the phone that says, get that product at a discounted price, because that's how they're getting it, is, and they're on those devices. There are a number of ways that we can get involved. And seek to educate yourself. There are a number of organizations, as Deb has said, that we are working here in Duluth to make sure that we have that support of people in the community.
Well, what we found at the Lung Association with some of the store audits that we've done is that the way that kids get the cigarettes are from other kids at high school. So if they work at a convenience store, or if they can purchase from someone who is of, you know, working at these stores, that is the access point that they get the products. So another one of our control tactics that we're looking at is the raise of the age of a purchase, and it as a way of preventing youth from gaining access. And the kids that work at this at the stores can easily sell to other kids. That's one option. Some kids that are selling to other children that they know that they're going to have purchase in large quantities of the products, we know that they're selling them to other kids. So these are other areas that could be controlled. And parents can keep a watch on kids who are doing those kinds of activities and not allow it.
Mm-hmm. So I have this additional piece that I found on the internet about Newport cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And it says here, a heavily advertised brand is Newport. And it is the cigarette brand leader among African-American youth in the United States. Nearly two-thirds of African-American youth smokers prefer Newport cigarettes. So it's cool. It's Newport. What other cigarettes, they're all targeting our kids, but what others specifically target our kids in such a way that when we see our kids with those Newports, we know that something's reaching them?
Well, I think it's important to note here, scientifically, there is a small amount of menthol in every cigarette. So, you know, let's not fool ourselves. Maybe Newport and Kool are the number one sellers. But the tobacco company knows that in order to, I mean, you're putting something that's burning and sucking it into your lungs. So you have to do something to alleviate that. I don't think the issue is what the products are. We know mm-hmm. you could look down, you walk down the street, and you'll see the filter, the brown filters, and you know they're Newports. You're absolutely right. But just about every cigarette that's out there, or you go into the store and just stand there and listen. I was in the store today as I stopped and got gas in the gas station, which is a place where cigarettes are sold more frequently to young people. And a gentleman came in and said, I need a pack of menthols. And so the store clerk went, well, do you want Newport or Marlboro or what do you want? And so he had to look at the color and decide what it was that he wanted. So there are a number of products out there.
So recently there was an organization that, and Deb, I think you're going to know more about this, that was targeting our community. The person was from another country. That individual was going to come to our community in behalf, perhaps, of the industry, the tobacco industry. And I know some people rallied around that and really got together and said, not in our community. What other kind of efforts can happen like that?
Well, when the tobacco company makes its mind up to target specific communities, they do it in a sneaky way because they know that some of the techniques that they have out there with general mass advertising does work. Their targeting through mobile telephones works, but they also have other techniques as well, and that is through the use of focus groups and actually asking specific questions of particular people that they want to talk to. And Duluth was targeted by a organization that was in Germany, a public relations firm hired by Altria, and were requesting a couple of the local nonprofit organizations in our city to pull together a couple of managers, pull together some of your low-income clients, so they were actually requesting these low-income basically organizations that serve low-income individuals to pull together this focus group for them, and that they would pay them hundreds of dollars an hour to sit in a room, tell them about their patterns of use or whatever through a focus group process, which a focus group process, if you don't know, is someone at the front of the room asking a lot of questions to gain information from a particular segment of the community. So through this means, the organizations weren't at all sure what Altria was, but our organization, the Lung Association, Pat McCone, is very familiar with the techniques that the tobacco company uses, knows who Altria is, informed those nonprofit organizations, this is who is calling upon our community. And this is the practice that they're doing. They're doing an underhanded way of getting information from us about who we are and how we would use their products. So a press conference was called, media attention was focused on this topic, and they backed away. And we do know that when we push back on the tobacco companies, they will retreat. But it takes a community to do the pushing.
And I was impressed by that leadership in the community of Duluth with some of the executive directors that received some of that information from the person or organization in Germany, and how they really set things in motion to say, we're not going to have that in Duluth. We're not going to have that in our community.
That is correct. Lee Stewart of the Churches United in Ministry in Duluth was one of the organizations that was requested to pull together information. Angie Miller from the Community Action Duluth were asked, and they reached out and found out. Also our mayor of Duluth was approached. And so with the community talking to each other about this as a topic, we can fend off these predatorial attacks by the tobacco companies that want to learn more information about us so that they can market their deadly product. Mm-hmm. They need more customers. If their customers are dying, they're going to have to come up with new customers. And the way they do it is underhanded and sneaky practices. And in our town, we're going to say no.
Absolutely. We're just about out of time. I'm here with Gene Nichols and Deborah Smith. And I, again, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here. But I want to ask you if there's anything additionally you want to share as we close the show tonight. Please feel free to do that. I'm going to start with you, Jean, and then you, Deborah. I want to thank everybody for listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to continue shows like this because we want to get the right message out to our community, because we want to impact our community in a way that is going to be truthful and it's going to be life-changing. So if you have anything else you want to say.
Yeah, I think one thing our community knows is that there are a lot of issues that go into play when we try to understand why people smoke in the first place. Yes, there's the youth factor, but it's the social determinants of health, the other issues, the economics, the housing issues that we are faced as a community each and every day that puts more stress on our community. Some of those things we can't do anything about. But if we arm ourselves with the knowledge of what we are doing to our bodies and what the harm of what menthol is and what the harms of menthol is doing to our bodies, that's a first step. And then seek ways to rid yourself of that. It's not easy. You know, mm-hmm. This is not about it. Deborah, I did not say stop smoking. We were saying understand what the issues are, and then make the right decisions for yourself. The community needs to make the decision for each and every one of us.
Absolutely. Deborah?
Yes, Henry. I'm especially proud of our youth that have come forward to tell their most personal stories about how tobacco has affected their lives. And again, I want to highlight that show that is coming up at Gamaji on March 31st. Also want to point out that there are other shows going on in the city of Duluth, like Reclaiming Sacred Tobacco, which will be held on April 27th at the Zeitgeist Theater, in which we're a part of, and we'll also have some of the art featured there as well. So there are some upcoming events, but we're very proud of our youth that come forward to tell their brave stories, and we're also wanting the menthol and flavored tobacco products to be moved out of the stores and into adult-only stores, and that is our initiative, and that's our laser-focused goal.
Absolutely. One more question that I just came up with here. I'm wondering if Jean's presentation will be recorded and available for church groups, school groups, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we do know that we will have a photographer available to take snippets of it. However, that gives us a really great idea that that is something that we should have available. So I'm going to get back to you on that one, Henry.
Okay.
And Henry, we've recorded this in down in Hennepin County. So my presentation is an internal link to Hennepin County, but I can make sure I get that to Deb and then to you.
Okay.
And you can see if you can get that to your audience.
Absolutely. We're happy to put it on our webpage and all of that. So, again, thank you, Deborah Smith and Jean Nichols, for your time. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Have a good evening and a great weekend. I have a few upcoming events or meetings I want to pass by you today. Now through March 31st, three Anishinaabe artists, Sarah Agaton-Howes, Ivy Vineo, and Leah Yellowbird, connect their ancestors' stories to their own in an art exhibition called Anishinaabe Kiwe that will be held in the Crook Gallery in Holden Fine Arts Center on the UWS campus. Today, from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., WTF, a feminist art exhibition, spoken word, and song night in Studio 3 West. That's 3 West Superior Street in downtown Duluth from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. On Saturday, March 18th, from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., this is part 2. Presented by the Duluth Superior Friends Meeting, they will be screening a video called A Force More Powerful, which is about instances of successful nonviolent resistance in the 20th century. Episodes include Gandhi's program of non-cooperation with British rule, the U.S. civil rights movement, and anti-apartheid work in South Africa, among others. Again, these are free and open to the public and will be held from 3 to 5 p.m. at the main branch of the Duluth Public Library in the Green Room. For more information, call 218-724-2659. That's 218-724-2659. On Sunday, March 19th at 1 p.m. in the Duluth Labor Temple, located at 2002 London Road, Common Ground, a discussion of issues and progressive solutions, will be held, and it is co-sponsored by the Duluth for Clean Water, Our Revolution Duluth, Cross-Cultural Alliance of Duluth, and more. Again, it starts at 1 p.m. at 2002 London Road in Duluth. This will be a conversation about progressive solutions to what's going on in our country today. All events are free and open to the public and are on the DTA transit routes. Thank you.
Guess it's true, I'm not good at a one-night stand. But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave, will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all I need. This ain't a good look and some self-control. Deep down I know this never works, but you can lay with me so it doesn't hurt. Oh, won't you